Then one of the ingredients in these candies was a monoglyceride. A monoglyceride is something that is used to make sure that the ingredients blend well together. Monoglycerides are made either from animal fat or from vegetable oil. And again, there's no way to know, looking at the label, whether it's an animal or vegetable source for the monoglyceride. And I'm trying to show you that if you don't have a sophisticated understanding of ingredients, then just reading the ingredient, many of the ingredients you don't even know what they are. They sound like there's nothing to them, but they could actually be non-kosher ingredients. Then this product has colors. There's different colors, candies here. Some are brown, some are red. Now, one way to color things the most commonly used red color in America today is an ingredient known as carmine. Carmine comes from an insect called the cochineal, and they take these insects and they grind them up, and the insect has the dye of the insect is very powerful. So they use insect powder in order to color the food items. Now, if you bought fruit cocktail, I hope you're not losing your appetite as I talk. But if you bought fruit cocktail, for example, without supervision, typically fruit cocktail has red cherries, and the cherries are artificially colored. You'll see on the label they'll say artificial color for the cherries. If there's no supervision, then almost with 100% certainty that those cherries are dyed with carmine. Now, they don't write on the label carmine because, again, if people would know that there were bugs and insects in the product, they wouldn't buy it. But and in fact, there was an article a few months ago in the Wall Street Journal where they wrote about different products that are using carmine, like some of the different candies have carmine. Different types of cereals use carmine. So in fruit cocktail, it's almost with certain, if it has hashkafa, then they use a kosher dye. But if it's not certified, then they're using carmine. So the coloring that's used in here could be very likely non, if it didn't have supervision, it would be non-kosher. There's also something called Encinada, which is a grape skin extract, which has issues of stam yenem. Wine that's not supervised or grape juice that's not supervised would not be kosher. So you could have Encinada present in the candy. You sometimes find that in lemonade drinks. They sometimes add Encinada. It's a commonly used ingredient. The product. If this product has whey. Whey is is something that's extracted from milk. When they make cheese, the cheese is the protein content of the milk is curdled, and when you curdle milk, there's liquid that floats to the top, and that liquid is very rich in milk flavor. And years ago, they didn't know what to do with it; they used to just throw it away. But they discovered maybe 30, 40 years ago that you could use that liquid as a substitute for milk, and they call that whey. Sometimes it comes as a powder, sometimes it comes as a liquid. The whey is cooked with the cheese. So if they're making hard cheese and they cook the cheese with the liquid, then that liquid has components of Gvina Sakum, of hard cheese, which if it's hard cheese that's done without supervision, it would not be kosher. So the whey could be not kosher. The other big thing that you can't tell about by looking at the label is what equipment the product is made on. You don't know what other types of items are made in the plant. They could make candies with different types of flavors that are not kosher. They could have a cheese flavored product. all sorts of different flavors that that would not be kosher. So, and that, if it's made in the same equipment, then it's, again, it's like cooking something kosher in a non-kosher pot that would render the item non-kosher. So just to give you a summary, it's theoretically, if we tried to spell Noach with seven mistakes, or if we tried to figure out what could be potentially wrong with this candy, so it could have in it beaver, cat, wine, lard, tallow, carmine, ancionata, which is grape skin extract, Venus acum, cheese, and there's actually more things, but I think that's enough just to give you an idea of why supervision is so important. Now, given the fact that it's so easy for a product to be non-kosher, so how do you know if it's kosher? So obviously you have to, that was the question you asked before, obviously the only way to know is to check the supervision. And again, there's this misconception that people have that, well, as long as it has a rabbi's name on the product, it's probably kosher. Or as long as it has a K in the product, it means that it's probably kosher. So the first thing I want to tell you is that a K on the product means absolutely nothing. Because, I mean, unless you know who's behind the K, in some states you could put a K on a product even though there's no supervision. I mean, K stands for kosher, but K is not a symbol you can copyright. The OU is copyrighted. You're not allowed to put an OU on a product without OU authorization. But anybody could use the K symbol if they so chose. When I first came to the OU 20 years ago, so there was a breadcrumb, there was one of our companies wanted to use breadcrumbs that had on the label a K to indicate it was kosher under supervision. So I called up the manufacturer of the breadcrumb company and I asked them, who is behind that K? Who's the rabbi that's certifying the product? You have a K, who's behind the K? So they told me that the rabbi's name is Rabbi Przyjanski. I said, where's he from? He said, he's from the Bronx. I never heard of Rabbi Przyjanski from the Bronx. So I called up a colleague of mine in the Bronx. I said, do you know Rabbi Przyjanski from the Bronx? So they said, the fellow said, sure, I knew him. He passed away 5 years ago. So I called up the company and I said, you know, you told me that your product is supervised by Rabbi Przyjanski from the Bronx, but do you know that he's not alive for the last 5 years? So they said, there was this long pause, and then the person on the other end of the line said, oh, no wonder we haven't seen him for such a long time. So just because there's a K on the product does not necessarily mean that there's a living rabbi. Yeah. I mean K, just a plain K. Triangle K is a copyrighted symbol, but I'm talking about a plain K. So plain K, now there are certain Ks that we know who the rabbi is behind the K. Some of them are reliable, but you really have to know who is the one that's providing the K. Now, even if a product has a symbol that's not a K, it has a difference to this. There's at least 800 symbols that are printed in Kashrus magazine that different Kashrus agencies use. But not all of those symbols are providing reliable supervision. There's really a few reasons why some supervisions are not reliable. One reason is there are some people that provide supervision that are total frauds. They're not competent. They don't care. They're not interested. I once visited a plant that made vegetable oil, and they had vegetable and animal oil systems in the plant, which I described before. It really needs a full-time hashkiah. And they had somebody else's hashkocha, and I asked them, how often does your rabbi visit the plant? And they told me he comes once every 3 or 4 years. Now, to visit a vegetable oil plant that makes vegetable and animal oil every 3-4 years means that the fellow just didn't care. So there are people that are, you know, Kashrus is a money-making enterprise for many people. So there are people giving hechsherim that just, they're in it for the money and they don't care. That, fortunately, is a very small percentage. But there are such people that are giving hechsherim. Then you have a group of people that are giving hechsherim that are just not competent, that they don't know what they're doing. I'll give you an example, I once visited a factory with a certain rabbi who was supervising the factory for 30 years, and before we walked into the factory I asked him, does this company manufacture dairy and powder? It was a bakery supply company. So they made various types of mixes for bakeries. I said, is it dairy and parv, or is it all parv? And it makes a big difference, because if it's dairy and parv, then you have to be concerned about whether if there's heat, and you can't cook dairy and parv in the same equipment. So he said, it's dairy and parv. I said, is there heat, or is it made cold? So he said, everything is cold. There's no heat in the manufacturing. It's all cold. So I walked into the factory, and in 2 seconds I saw there was heat in the factory. Now in a factory, they don't cook with heat the way we do in our house. They don't have a big pot and put it on a fire on a stovetop. They have these huge kettles that could be 10-15 feet high, and the source of heat is not a fire underneath the kettle, but they have what's called a steam jacket, which means that there's a double wall to the kettle. And there's a space between the two walls, and they inject in that space either hot water or steam, and that's how they cook the product that's in the kettle. So I saw that this company was using steam jacketed kettles because they had a steam line that was leading to the kettle. I knew right away it was a hot kettle. So I said to the rabbi, I said, you told me that the kettle was cold, but I see it's a steam jacketed kettle. How can you tell me it's cold? He says, what's a steam jacket? He didn't know what a steam jacket was. Now, to not know what a steam jacket is like, if you claim to be a baseball star, you never heard of a home run. I mean, how could he not know what a steam jacket kettle was if he's doing kosher supervision? So I took him and I said, here, put your hand on the kettle. He put his hand there and he saw that it was hot. And he was like amazed. He never knew. He was there for 30 years. He never knew that the kettle was hot. If he had tripped when he was walking through the plant and bumped into the kettle, he would have discovered that the kettle was hot. But he never knew that the kettle was hot. So there are people, unfortunately, who are giving hashgacha that just do not understand what's going on in the plant. And that the example I gave is actually a very simple example. But plants are enormously complicated. If you walk through a factory, and you're going to see afterwards a video, which will give you a somewhat of an idea of what it's like to supervise a plant, there could be miles of pipes and different types of complicated machines and reactors and computers. And if you don't have a sophisticated understanding of food technology, then you're not going. The person who's doing the supervision won't know what they're looking for. And the third reason why not every hechsher is reliable is because the person that's giving the hechsher has to be a detective. He has to be suspicious. He has to know how to discover what's really going on in the plant. And I'll tell you one story, and this will be my last story, and then I'll give you a few minutes for questions. One of the people that worked for the OU, his name is Rabbi Gershon Siegel, and he was a mashgiach in a factory that baked pies. And he came to the factory one day, and he saw that the pies were round, but the molds that they used for the pies were all square. Now, everybody knows you can't make a round pie in a square pan. So he said to the factory owner, he said, "How can you make these pans, these pies, in square pans?" And his assumption was that they probably were buying the pie dough ready-made from another company, and they came in around those, and they were not making it in their plant because they weren't equipped to make it. They didn't have round pans. So they said, oh, Rabbi, today we just happened to throw away the pans. We'll be getting new pans. You'll see tomorrow we'll have new pans. So he comes back the next day, and the next day they had round pans. And they said, you see, we're making our pies in the round pans. But Rabbi Siegel is a very good mashgiach. He's very suspicious. So he looked at the pie pan, and engraved in the pie pan was the name of the manufacturer of the company that made those pans. And then he looked at the dough of the pie, and the dough had picked up an impression from the pie pan of the name of the manufacturer. But unfortunately, it was not, the names did not match. It wasn't the same name. So it was clear that even though they had bought these nice, shiny new pie pans, but that's not where, that's not what they were using to manufacture the pie. So a mashgiach has to have four sets of eyes. He's got to be somebody who knows how to investigate, and there are many people, unfortunately, who give supervision that are not capable of doing that. So how do you know which supervisions are, there's 800 supervisions out there, how do you know which supervisions are reliable and which are not? You have to ask somebody who is knowledgeable. You have to ask your local rabbi, or your teachers, or your rebbeim. You have to speak to somebody that's familiar with the different kosher symbols and can tell you whether it's reliable. And if you don't have information, then, you know, when you don't know, so you have to wait until you're able to find out whether, in fact, it's a reliable symbol. Okay. Are there any questions that you'd like to ask? I've talked long enough. Anybody have any questions?
How come the OU or none of the other conscious organizations will print a list of, like, what's reliable? Why is it so hard for the consumer?
That's a good question. Why don't we print a list? So the answer is it would be suicidal for us because the people that we left out of the list would be highly offended and insulted, and they would attack us for not endorsing their super. And by not putting it on the list, it will imply that they're not good. And politically, it would just be something that would be a catastrophe. So unfortunately, we're not able to provide that, at least in an official list. Yeah.
You mentioned Kasher Magazine. They usually have a list of the kosher symbols in there. Most of them reliable?
They write on the bottom of every page that the fact that a symbol appears in the magazine is no indication that it's reliable. They're just doing a public service. If you see a product and you see a symbol, what you need to know is who's the rabbi behind the symbol. How do you know who the rabbi is? So they're doing a great service by giving you the name of the conscious organization or the rabbi, but they're not endorsing any of the symbols that are in that magazine. Okay, so
is there any way that we can ever eat something that doesn't have a symbol on it, and then it can be okay? Or?
There are certain foods that don't need symbols. So, for example, water doesn't. Bottled water does not need hashgacha. Flavored water does, because flavored water has a flavor, and flavors need hashgacha.
But
the vitamins in water or vitamins in milk could be not kosher. For example, vitamin D can be made from shark. The vitamins could be not kosher, but vitamins are always batel, b'shishim. The amount of vitamins that they put in is minuscule. So, once
you buy vitamin water without kosher?
When you say vitamin water, you mean the water that they...
It's called
vitamin water? I don't know. I'm not familiar with that. I mean, normally they put vitamins into orange juice, they put vitamins, or into different fruit juices. Those vitamins are always, I don't know, vitamin water, I don't know what level of concentration of vitamins they put. Maybe if they're making water special for vitamins, maybe they put in a higher level of vitamins. I don't know.